Well, welcome to On the Village Green, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Richard Byford. And today we're going to do something totally different that I've never done before. I'm going to have a conversation with myself. And in fact, I'm going to tell you the story of my summer adventure 2016. I was suffering from writer's block and boredom and a desire to see if there is life after being in America for a long time. The answer is, yes, there is. And what a life it is. I took off for 3 weeks to go to Japan, Thailand, Vietnam, and the Philippines to learn and to see for myself what other people think of America, what other people think of the elections in America and the candidates, and how the world is changing. I sat down and talked to people from almost every European country, especially the Dutch and the Italians. Spoke to a whole bunch of people from the UK. Every religion, including Muslims and Buddhists and Catholics, and have had lengthy conversations and relationships with people from the countries that I have visited. You know, most of us who are educated and have traveled around the world know that America is no longer looked up to as the world leader. Yes, we are looked up to because Americans are perceived to have a lot of money and a good lifestyle. And frankly, wherever you go, that is the main reason Americans are welcome. Not because we are knowledgeable about the world and other people's problems, but because most Americans that they meet have money. Mostly they think that Americans are arrogant, and we really don't care about anything else except us. And to be honest, that hasn't changed much over the years. I can remember working in the tourist profession in Europe and Spain, especially back in the 60s, and people would describe Americans in exactly the same fashion. Of course, there are exceptions, and all of us have many exceptional stories. The general opinion of almost every person I have met is that Americans are arrogant and ignorant about the world around us. Wow, that's quite a statement, isn't it? Huh. But I arrived at a point on my trip that I always told people that I am English living in California. The most favorite destination is California, and the place where most people would want to visit is the state of California. I did meet one Vietnamese girl, however, that said she wanted to go to Oklahoma, which kind of surprised me a little. When I asked her why, she replied that she had friends in Oklahoma, and it seemed such a nice place. So my first country on this whirlwind tour of mine was Japan, which I have to say took me totally by surprise. Japan is so very well organized and run as a country. I mean, it's amazing. The people are the politest I've ever experienced and have total respect for each other, especially for their visitors. I was so impressed. Such a big difference from the lack of respect by Americans for almost everything that exists in America, and the world for that matter. Ah, Americans. Well, I first came to America in 1970. Americans were polite, respectful, and happy. There is no way that those three words could be used to describe most Americans nowadays. Someone asked me what I thought was the biggest threat to America. You're not going to like this answer. My answer? The Republicans. White men who just cannot get used to the idea that very soon they will be a minority and who want to take us back to a time that in this current world would be archaic and just plain dangerous. Two girls from Holland summed it up pretty good. The white men in America must come to terms with the fact that they will not be and cannot be the ruling majority any longer. The men in Europe and England crossed that bridge many years ago. You know, they even said, which I thought was very interesting, that even the American national holidays to celebrate people like Martin Luther King are celebrated in such a way that it makes the white ruling majority look good. I have seen just in the past few weeks integrated couples from all over the world and their children. And it is obvious to me that one day in the not too distant future, racism will just fade away as the world will all be one color, a shade of brown. It is also obvious to me, and certainly very much so to other nationalities or religions, that if we were able to take away the ruling governments and the controlling media, we would all get on and live together throughout the world as friends, understanding that we have different religions and beliefs, but accepting the differences and not making them a divide. While in Bangkok, I went out drinking with four guys, two Muslims, a Hindi, and a Catholic. When I brought up this subject, their answer was quite surprising. We are the modern faces of religion and the world, and we can all be friends and brothers. One of my new Muslim friends said, "No religion in the world dictates war. They all preach love, and very soon the rest of the world will catch up with us." Wow. Okay, enough. Let's get back to Japan. The train system in Japan is just about second to none in the world. It is so well organized, so huge, and runs like clockwork. I mean, it runs to the second. If you're 3 seconds late for the time for the train to take off, you've missed the train. It's amazing. Most of the seats are reserved by ticket, which also makes it work extremely well. Now, a quick story about that. I was on an early morning train going to Nagasaki from Tokyo. I felt a little strange as I was in my reserve seat, but I was the only person in that car. That is until the first stop, when this real pretty Japanese girl got on, and guess where her reserve seat was located? Your first guess is correct. Right next to me. She spoke four languages and had hitchhiked all over South America and Asia by herself and was obviously well positioned in a company as she was on her way to, I don't know, a meeting with important clients. Unfortunately for me, she was in a 3-year-long relationship with a Portuguese guy, but our conversation for the 2-hour train ride was fascinating and very informative. My first stop was Nagasaki, a big, bustling city, and without visiting the memorials, no one would know about the history with the atomic bomb. Again, I was talking to a Japanese woman, because one of the things that stood out to me was there were thousands of tourists from every nation you could think of in the world, except I never saw an American. Now, I'm sure Americans do go to these places, but I personally never experienced that. Two comments to that. The Japanese woman said it was because she thinks American, especially the men, have a very arrogant attitude about the bomb. And two Dutch girls said they thought it might be because Americans are ashamed of dropping the bomb. Well, I certainly hope the Dutch girls were correct. It was the same in Hiroshima, too. And again, I seriously and sincerely hope that the Dutch girls were correct. Hiroshima is beautiful. But again, the whole experience in both cities made me extremely sad. President Obama is so respected by the Japanese because he had the respect and the guts to be the first sitting American president to visit Hiroshima. And he did it a few months ago. I was allowed to sign the guest book that President Obama signed. And so I wrote an abbreviated chorus of my song, "We Are Born of Change," and signed it, "An American Troubadour." What an honor. The first day I arrived in Japan, I was standing on a corner in this big city they call Tokyo, with a map in my hand, looking lost and looking for my hotel. I was having no luck when this older gentleman came up to me and wanted to help. He spoke maybe 10 words in English, but he took me by the hand, took me to 2 stops on the subway, and led me straight to the front entrance of my hotel. Way, way out of his way. I offered to buy him lunch, but he politely refused and disappeared into the crowd. I never saw him again. This kind of experience happened several times during my short stay. One young lady took me around the subway to my correct platform. I couldn't find my own way, of course. She missed her train doing this. And when I thanked her and questioned her, she said, "It is the Japanese way." I was very impressed. It rained a lot in Japan. and it seemed I was always wet because I always left my coat in the hotel. The next poem came from a real life experience. There are not a lot of homeless people in Japan, but a few seemed to gather at this certain railway station where my hotel was located. An older lady insisted on giving me an umbrella, even though I was already soaked through to the skin. So I sat down with an old homeless lady and gave her the umbrella. I sat with this group of very wet homeless people for about 45 minutes. They didn't understand my words, and I certainly didn't understand their words, but we talked. We talked for all that time, and we understood each other. I wrote this poem when I got back to the hotel. I hope you like it. When they ask me where I live, I tell them in the city. Do you live uptown or downtown? I tell them, when it's raining, I sleep downtown. When it's sunny, I stay uptown. I have a place near a beautiful park. Why don't I just tell them I'm homeless? Tonight it's raining like a son of a bitch. I am soaked through to my bones. A lady gave me an umbrella. That was very kind. I was already past needing it. Lily's already rolled up in her garbage bags and blanket. She always says that only a fool worries about the weather. No one can control it. And we're still homeless. Just look at all those umbrellas walking by. Huh. All hurrying to get somewhere or nowhere. Sometimes it doesn't matter if you live or die. It's still going to rain. We're still going to be homeless. Does it really matter? You wouldn't believe what you see on the streets. Doesn't matter if you're uptown or downtown. Like everyone else, you make the best of what you got. And the truth is, tonight it's rain. Oh, damn the rain. I wish I wasn't wet. I wish I wasn't homeless. It's a great pity that those folks that I wrote that for will never get to read this. They'll never understand it. And so I moved on to Thailand. Now, the amazing city of Bangkok. There were over 200 people in the line waiting for a taxi when I got to the airport. So it took a while, but I jumped in line with an American kid who was going to a totally different hotel than mine. But once in the taxi, we persuaded the driver to go to my hotel first. Once in my room, I decided to go for a quick walk, since I didn't plan this, but the hotel was located right in the middle of the street vendors and nightclubs and street girls. However, it proved to be a bad mistake, as I wasn't looking where I was going, and I missed the first step of three marble steps and fell down, hitting my head pretty hard on the marble, and blacking out for probably just a few seconds. When I woke up, I was being looked after by six or seven scantily dressed street girls. My first thought was, wow, this is what heaven is like. But seriously, I get asked the question all the time is, what did they steal from you? They didn't steal anything from me. On a more serious note, I really did crack my head pretty hard. And I think I cracked a rib or so because, man, it hurt. I was in the worst pain I can remember since I was bull riding. However, the street girls were so cool. They helped me back to my hotel room. They looked after me when they should have been on the streets working, of course. The next day, at least two of them came and checked on me and brought me pain pills and food and water. They said they were sisters. One of them had been with 12 guys in one day at $150 a time. Wow, that's a lot of money in any country, especially Thailand. They left Thailand the same day as I did. Some guy was taking them to Hong Kong for 4 days, and one of them was going to the Olympics in Brazil with a rich guy as his girlfriend for 2 weeks. Hey, not a bad way to make a living. $1,000 a day. While we're on the subject of sex, it is everywhere in Bangkok. I have to admit that I have never seen so many beautiful women. A lot of older white guys have young Thai girlfriends or wives. I feel bad that I hurt so much that I could not participate in that. I went to a very elaborate Las Vegas-style dance show about the history of Thailand. It was technically very well done and very professional. I visited the River Kwai. Remember the movie? The true story of the bridge over the River Kwai? I don't remember who was in it. I rode the death train across the bridge and along the river, stopped at a little village for lunch, and then went on a bamboo raft back down the river again to the village. I spent the day with a couple from Miami. He was from Chile and she was from Japan. We had a great time. They were so cool. Unfortunately, I've lost their contact information. The next day, I cruised on the river in Bangkok, stopping at temples and the Grand Palace. I hooked up with this couple from Italy and ended up going to a sky bar in Bangkok that same evening and, you know, drinking just a little. My last night in Bangkok, I had promised myself I was going to go to the sex clubs. Now, I wasn't thrilled with the idea of going alone, and to be honest with you, I'm not the kind, I know this will surprise some of you, but I'm really not into going to sex clubs. But a waitress from Hooters, who I had become friends with, said that she and her French boyfriend would show me what they, excuse the language, ladies, but what they show, what they call the pussy clubs. That's what exactly what they're called in Thailand. It is something that everyone does when they visit Thailand. I mean, it's a known fact. Watching girls propel ping pong balls or darts out of their private parts or doing other weird things does not really turn me on. And I can think of many things I would rather do with those private parts than play ping pong. I'm sorry, this is an adult show. However, I was so much in pain that I backed out from going. So I still hadn't done the one thing that everybody does when they go to Bangkok, including getting the massages that are just about everywhere. The next morning, I left for Vietnam. I have to say that Bangkok, the people, their culture, both old and new, and my street girlfriends, and all the very interesting conversations I had about America will stay with me forever. And I will go back there at my earliest opportunity. Now, my first impression of Ho Chi Minh, which used to be Saigon, what it was like Tijuana on steroids. I mean, it was the poster child for not recycling, shall we say. Dirty and full of street vendors that won't leave you alone, and the motorcycles. In my whole life, I have never seen anything like it. Thousands and thousands and thousands of scooters and motorcycles. There are no lanes or speed limits. They just go wherever they want to and will not stop for buses, cars, or pedestrians. It truly is the most amazing thing I've ever seen. Families with young children on one bike, pregnant women, a woman breastfeeding on the back of a moped. Really, I mean, it's pretty amazing. I rode on the back of a Vespa scooter with a girl who works at the local Pizza Hut. I only went a few blocks. Wow. I am going riding on my own bike with a helmet later this week, I think. However, there are two Vietnams, the old and the new. I was introduced to the new by a crazy Italian sax player who I met at Burger King. He invited me to the club that he was playing at. The club was on the 24th floor of a skyscraper. And I had suddenly entered the land of beautiful people with money who live a totally different lifestyle than I was used to seeing on the streets. The best wines, exotic drinks, appetizer foods just to die for. The jazz band were playing a Cuban dance evening, and this stunningly beautiful Vietnamese girl got up and Latin tango danced to the band. She was very professional. Just a spellbinding moment in time. She actually was the owner's wife. He was a very tall, very good-looking Australian, about 40 years old. I complimented his wife, and guess what? She graduated from the Idaho State University with a business degree and learned tango dancing in the U.S. Really, I am not joking. Her husband runs four of the sky bars, two in Ho Chi Minh, one in Singapore, and one in Shanghai. They invited me to join them, and they took me via the private entrance to the Sky Bar, where there was 300 young people, all dressed to kill in the latest fashions, on the 54th floor in the open air, dancing all this American disco music. And by the way, the DJs were excellent. He could tell I was a little surprised. He told me this one bar alone will make him over $50,000 that one night alone. I am meeting him and his wife and a group of his friends for dinner and a tour of the city in 2 days' time. Actually, it never happened because he got called away to another job. But it would have been interesting, I can tell you. One Sunday morning at my hotel in Ho Chi Minh City, I decided to take a jacuzzi to see if it would help relieve the pain, you know, from my rib. I no sooner got in the jacuzzi than four little kids, about 10 years old, got in with me. The mother sat and watched them. One of the little girls, whose name was May, was 11 years old. She started talking to me in perfect English. Really surprised me. They came home, I guess their home was in Hanoi. And at their school, they are required to learn both languages, Vietnamese and English. So I carried on a really intelligent conversation with these kids, and May translated everything I said to her mother. What I thought was going to be a disaster turned out to be really fun. May was simply, and I mean this, simply amazing. She asked me if I had children. She said that if I came back in 10 years, she would marry me. You know, I don't think I can wait that long. She just giggled. She was priceless. This afternoon, I went to the war memorial in the museum and went from laughing with May to looking at photographs of kids her age being killed and dismembered by American troops and war. There were hundreds of people from all over the world at the museum, and there was a silence that I will never forget. You could tell the Americans, as they were the ones with tattoos all over their bodies. But from the people I spoke to, they all agreed that the world, and especially America, still has not learned from history. And it could certainly all happen again, especially if Trump gets in. Well, that's my journey so far, full of great highs and certainly some lows. Most people say that I am much more English than American. And that is refreshing to find a person who is willing to talk sincerely about the challenges that face us around the world. I shared a moment of silence with a small group of people from Norway who were commemorating the 6th anniversary of the mass shooting in their country. I spoke at length with a family from England about leaving the European market and with their 21-year-old daughter who, after hitchhiking around the world by herself, just won a scholarship to go to acting school in London. It's interesting to see my life mirrored in such beautiful and knowledgeable young people. It is also nice that they want and are willing to listen to advice from someone who has been there and done that. I went on a speedboat up the Mekong Delta with a Vietnamese family, and guess where they were from? They live in Cathedral City, and their kids go to Palm Desert High School. Can you believe that? Meeting them on the Mekong Delta? Amazing. It truly is getting to be a small world in terms of community, at least. I really did have probably one of the most heart-wrenching experiences I had on the whole trip while I was in Vietnam. I actually sang with a remarkable acoustic band at the old Rex Hotel, a very historical establishment with quite a history, big palatial building. It was the headquarters of the American Army and the headquarters of the French Army when they were all based and stationed in Vietnam. I was asked to go and sing at one of the music colleges in Ho Chi Minh City because the lead singer in the in this band was a female who sounded like Janis Joplin. And she went to this college. So they asked me to go and singing in what I thought was going to be a coffee house, but it was kind of like a college cafeteria. I sung, you know, some of my original songs. And then I told the crowd, which was all young students, that I wanted to sing a song from 1964, written by Pete Seeger, called Where Have All the Flowers Gone? It was an anti-war song, as you all know. And this is where I got just bowled over. I sang the first verse, and by the time I got through the second verse, every student in the cafeteria was standing up and singing this song with me. They were singing it loud, just belting it out with me. I tell you, I had tears running down my face. Just one of those experiences, because none of those kids were born during the war. Pretty amazing story. The girl singer's name, the girl that sang with the band, her name was Tuyen. And she really was so sweet and sings and does sing. She doesn't do it on purpose. Sings like Janis Joplin. We will remain friends, I am sure, because we communicate now on Facebook. As you all know, I have always enjoyed living on the edge. But during this trip, I have to say that I certainly haven't been looking for the edge, although on occasions it has confronted me. I think what I've enjoyed most on this trip is the conversations with people from all over the world, all religions, all colours, and all different and amazing customs. I was sitting in a McDonald's close to my hotel in Bangkok when this beautiful, and I mean beautiful, girl with those very large Middle Eastern brown eyes, but with a full headscarf, etc., and a long dress, came in the main door of McDonald's. I watched her order, and I kind of hoped that she would sit next to me. And she did. We talked, and she was more flirtatious. I guess flirtatious is probably not the right word, but more open than I had expected. All of a sudden, in the middle of the conversation, she stood up, said, "My mother," and ran out of the back door and left as her mother walked in the front door. Now, I'm sure her mother saw us together, but it was all explained that it was a very bad thing for the daughter to be caught talking to an American alone. I would have been quite happy to talk to both of them, the mother included. I was disappointed. I had so many questions for them, but I am told the daughter could actually get killed for doing what she did. On to my last country on this trip, the Philippines. Along the same lines as the last story, I am staying in a hotel in the Philippines that is quite traditional, and I'm one of the very few white people here. I rode on the elevator up to the breakfast room with a large, muscular black man with a baseball cap on and backwards on his head, and his wife, a slim black girl with terrific eyes, but wearing a full headscarf and long floor-length robe. The man said good morning, and we talked briefly. At the buffet, I happened to cross paths with his wife. The way she looked at me broke my heart in many pieces. And she looked at me from her table several times when she knew he wasn't watching. What was I to do? When it's time for me to leave, I told them to have a nice day and left. But I will never, ever forget her eyes. Wow. There was a mall close to where I stayed in Manila, which had every kind of American restaurant and American chain store imaginable. The Greenbelt Mall in Makati is amazing, not only for its size, 5 very large city blocks and 3 stories high, but every American and European name you can think of, from Fridays to the very high-end steakhouses, Ace Hardware to Apple and Hallmark. It is truly amazing. It's just like being back in America. I chose a wonderful, very traditional Indian restaurant in this mall. I love Indian food, as a lot of you know. The waitress, all the waitresses, were Indian. The food was the best, and of course, there were hookahs for smoking for dessert. I had finished my dinner when these three loud Middle Eastern men came in with their bought and paid for Filipino girlfriends. One extremely exotic and beautiful, one very pleasant looking, and the other one was at the bottom of the scale for looks. The Middle Eastern man stared at me briefly and ordered their drinks and carried on. The exotic girl kept looking at me, and whenever she could get away with looking at me, she would flirtatiously smile at me. I kind of thought this was weird. The man with the ugly girlfriend happened to catch this and formed a gun shape with his hand and pointed at me and pretended to shoot me. I kind of reckoned it was time for me to leave. On my way out, I stopped by their table and said good evening to all of them and whispered in the ear of the guy who shot me, "Don't get upset with me because you got the ugly one." I bowed and left. I thought it was time. I do think that I was followed by a couple of their bodyguards for a short while, but I lost them by going into Baskin Robbins and ordering an ice cream and immediately leaving by the exit on the other side of the counter. Damn, she was beautiful. And so I wrote a poem for the occasion. The poem is called "She Was an Asian Beauty." Beauty is in the eye of the beholder, but in anyone's eyes, she was beautiful. Her velvety, lightly tanned skin was soft to the touch. Her eyes gave just a hint of what she was hiding in her soul. Her naked breasts were just the right size for her body, and her long legs balanced everything to proportion. She was an Asian beauty. She was the answer to every man's fantasy, and for a certain price, your fantasy could come true. But only the joys of her body were for sale. Her spirit remained wild and free. She was an actress. Well, she could take her audience on their imaginary ride. No stage training could have made her any more perfect. She was an Asian beauty. Our eyes met from 20 feet away, just like a scene from an old Hollywood movie. Oh, this would be no ordinary encounter. What started as a spark soon grew into a wild, raging fire. I just stood still as she moved towards me. Her breasts moved seductively. Her eyes burned into my soul. She was an Asian beauty. The man in me wanted to see this through. See it through to the ultimate happiness. Damn, she was good. The sublime actress. But I wanted more. I wanted to put her on my dashing white horse and take her away to the mountains. Of course, a dashing white horse would certainly draw attention, but there was no room even to walk between the cars. Besides, maybe she would just laugh at me, for she could have any man that could pay her price. I can see her now, my lady, my queen, and all my people would be in awe of her beauty. And there would be wine and fine foods. And every man would yearn for her touch. She was the most beautiful Asian woman I had ever seen. And then I was pushed aside by the crowds of people crossing through the hundreds of honking cars. God, I miss her so much. Why does reality always hurt? She was a beautiful Asian dream. You know, I think three things stand out about my stay in Manila. It truly is the filthiest city I've ever been to. It makes places in Mexico look like a poster child for recycling. There are more exotic, beautiful women here in Manila, both Filipino and from all over the world, than I've ever seen in one place. Oh, this is a very, very Catholic country. But sex is a very big barter system here. And Americans are only popular because they are a walking ATM machine and have money. And finally, there is no Trump fans here at all. I guess the one of the things that really stands out here is the number of older white guys, not just American, who are married to or who are in a relationship with very young Filipino girls. They all seem to be happy, so as far as I'm concerned, what the heck? The girl gets to have a good life, and frankly, the older guys get to have a physical relationship, which they probably wouldn't get at home. So, you know, if you can't find me after I'm 85 years old, you know where to look. I unfortunately have not been able to get out of Manila very much. I didn't have the money or the time. But the beaches and the islands are exotic and the water is very warm. However, it is dangerous. And there have been many men who have had their heads separated from their bodies by pirates or terrorists. I actually met some of these not-so-friendly people on a trip to the island of Mindanao. I hope I said that right. And on several occasions had to play cat and mouse with them. I'm way too fond of myself as a whole person to let them catch me. Trust me. Mindanao is next to Davao, where a bomb killed 14 people a few days before my visit to the area. By the way, the ship we traveled on was basically a ferry which carries trucks, etc., from island to island, and hundreds of people. The ship has very little sanitation and breaks down frequently. And tourist class sleeps 60 people to a cabin. Not exactly what you'd call the Princess Cruises. Well, I hung out briefly with a guy and his girlfriend from Holland. She was on her way to go home, to go back to college. He was joining a crew of a yacht for 2 months. He has sailed these waters before and loves it. He says the islands and the beaches are some of the best in the world. He has sailed quite a lot. He has a very patient, understanding girlfriend, and I certainly hope he knows what he's doing in those waters. I was skeptical when I started out on this trip, you know, but I have learned so much, and I have met so many different people from around the world. I have never stopped asking questions. The first thing that has to happen is that Americans have to come to terms with the fact that there is a whole world out there, most of which the majority of Americans don't even know exists. We are so wrapped up in our lives in America and are so ignorant about the rest of the world. We may have some of the best colleges in the world, but American youth deserve a better education. One that encompasses the youth from all the countries in the world. They have the means to do so. It's called social media. I am of the opinion that if used correctly, Facebook and other mediums will be the way that we can all communicate together. Take the governments out of the equation. And almost everyone believes that we are all brothers and sisters. How and when did the governments of the world become so disruptive, corrupt, and self-serving? Were they not designed to represent the people that they serve? Oh boy, we have a lot of work to do. And you know, to all the troubadours of the world, we need to continue Pete Seeger's work. I have seen firsthand that when music touches people and they all sing together and become one, something wonderful happens. We do truly all become one family, brothers and sisters. Our bodies all function the same. All of our bloods are red. We all need clean water. We all laugh and cry. We all feel pain, joy, and love. We all enjoy the connection that comes with sharing our bodies and making love. Babies are all conceived and born the same way. And a mother will always be a mother. Maybe all the politicians should be mothers. They would take care of us. Well, stay well, my friends. This is just my adventure and my opinions. It has been an interesting summer. Take the time and have your own adventure, and you are more than welcome to share your opinions on this program. That is why this show is called On the Village Green. Well, I hope you've enjoyed and found this kind of interesting. It was an adventure that I will never forget. This is your traveling troubadour, Richard Byford, and you have been listening to On the Village Green.